Don't spend another winter with your home colder than it should be. Hi, I'm Roy Spencer with PermaSeal. We measure the amount of heat loss and recommend solutions to keep it comfortable. Call PermaSeal for your free estimate, 800-421-SEAL, or visit permaseal.net.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Paul Listick, Behind the Curtain. It's my opportunity to step away from the worlds of law and politics you watch me cover on television every day into the world of art, entertainment, and that means comedy. And joining me now is one of, I fell in love with this guy years ago on America's Got Talent, and he is going strong and stronger all the time. You're going to recognize him, too. We're going to talk a little bit about that past, but especially his upcoming visit to the Den Theater on January 31st and February 1st. Joining me is the great Drew Lynch. Drew, good to see you.
Good to see you, Paul. I fell in love with you during that intro, buddy. That was, I think we can wrap it up, honestly. That was, we had a good episode today.
Yeah, if you move to Chicago, we're good to go. Yeah. Hey, so a little bit of past. So America's Got Talent, and you were season 10. And I don't know if you like hate remembering back on all these days or whether it's fun, but you, what a grand year that was for you. Golden buzzer from Howie Mandel. That would still be floating me today. Does it still work for you?
Yeah. I mean, I play that video every day in order to, reach climax. But I will tell you that, it was a great year. I honestly, that whole experience, I felt like, overwhelmed, you know. I felt like just so out of place doing America's Got Talent. You know, I'm this little kid. I don't know why I said little. I am little, but I don't know why I'm abusing myself so early. I usually wait until later in the episode before I start.
We're gonna talk about that too. Yeah,
self-loathing. Yeah, there's so much self-loathing that's gonna happen so soon. So I don't know what I felt. Just very much like I was this kid. I felt very vulnerable. Just being only. First of all, I stutter. I've stuttered for, you know, most of my adult life, and during America's Got Talent, you know, you like, as a comedian, you just have a microphone. That's it. You got all these people in the, there's a dance group, like stretching and doing headstands and spinning on their pelvises. Like there's a singer over there who's like, you know, doing a bunch of scales, and there's a magician who's like making his parents like get back together or whatever magicians do. And like, I feel like I'm just so vulnerable, because I'm like, not only am I just here with my words, but I'm sometimes not even here with my words, because being a stand up and, you know, obviously feeling so vulnerable by not being able to account for being able to time things out, you know, because of my speech, like that was definitely a challenge. But that whole season, people kept voting me back. So I was like, all right, I guess I'll keep doing this. If you want me here, I'll do it. But I don't know that I want to.
Well, you came in second. I find it interesting that the really great comedians, you, I love Taylor Williamson, I've interviewed Taylor, yeah, and have seen him. You always seem to, in the end, you're like right there, but then you lose to somebody with an inanimate kind of object. I mean, I think you lost to a ventriloquist. Taylor lost to somebody who didn't speak English and was doing things on a wall. What is it? They're just the comedian thing. America just won't finish it up.
Yeah. America just, they don't trust themselves. They're like, I don't know. He made us laugh, but that's not enough for me. He didn't come to my potluck or whatever Americans want. I don't know what they want. He didn't taste my chili. It's been in my grandma's generations for years. They came over from Ireland. We potato famine. I don't know what I'm riffing on right now, Paul. But the point is that it is all a spectacle. That when you have to kind of dress like all these other acts have these, you know, they have their, there's a spectacle in it, you know. I mean, I remember even on my season was Piff the Magic Dragon, a super funny magician / comedian.
Yeah, he's on our morning show. See him on our morning. Show all the time. He's around Chicago.
He's great. He's and like I felt so I felt just beside myself to be able to watch how talented all of these people are, and just to be just near them and just to talk to them, like, you know, intimately during the show. You're having this experience that no other people have ever had, like almost nobody has had, where you're in a bubble. You're not really you don't look like you don't look online to look at like how you're doing or how you're just kind of like, you're, it's like a test group a little bit. And you're just kind of like, we'll just see what happens. And you're all advocating for each other because there's so much pressure to be undergoing while you're in this bubble. But at the same time, you're also competing. So it's just, it's so weird. You know, Last Comic Standing is like, it's all comedians. And so you can just judge like comic to comic to comic to comic, right? So you can feel like you can get a better sense of, all right, this person kind of places here or there. But during America's Got Talent, you know, like I said, you're going up against dogs, you know, and you know, there's a guy who swallows a lock and he makes a pigeon throw up. Like it's bizarre, you know. It's really, really weird to compare apples to puking doves. So
yeah, and I'll be honest, I voted for you for sure, although there was not a, I would have had to vote for a dog because I'm all about
dogs. Of course,
dogs,
I would too yeah. If there was a dog on my season. I would not get all my votes.
So I'm not going to stay with America's Got Talent for too long, but I have a few friends who have been involved in that. A friend this past season, Liv Warfield, who was amazing, Golden Buzzer winner from Simon. And but here's the thing. Sometimes I think that, and whether it's America or whatever, but when there's somebody who has true amazing talent, it's almost as though in the end, the show itself isn't about the person who is that real star because they're going to make it on their own. It might just be about someone who needs that push from the show. Because I know, you know, that when Liv left the show the season, basically Simon, I don't mean to speak out of turn here, but Simon let her know your career is not, you are going places. And she is. So when you were there and there, it's you and one other person, did you have this moment of how nervous were, how did you feel about that? And then when they announced that you're number two, are you smile? Are you okay? Or do you really want to kill somebody?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't go right away to a felony, but I, you know, maybe a small misdemeanor, like I would say just not grand arson, but just like a small,
slash the tires,
like a small,
slash tires.
Yeah, like an, yeah, for, like, if like grand pianos, like the grandest of the pianos, I would say like an upright version of arson. So I would do upright arson, not grand. And I don't know, like, I felt relief. I felt, you know, there are contractual obligations when you end up on these shows. So you don't know the extent of what control or what's within your jurisdiction after the fact. There's some question marks. So it kind of feels like, you know, if you get to go all the way to the end of the show, like I had the fortune of doing, and you place anywhere in the top, whatever, 10 or 5 or 2, you know, it's all good. So I just, you know, like, I think they kind of have a model and they like to feed that model of like, all right, what would sustain a show in Vegas for a while? Like, let's say that's the question that they're asking, right? So, you know, I lost to a ventriloquist, but he's a very talented ventriloquist, but he has like, there's set changes and he has different dummies and different things, you know? And he's also, you know, like I'm a kid, you know, I was a young kid at that time. So it's just, there could also be maybe the influence of what's Vegas or what's not, but I'm also not even here to try to feel like I need to understand their initiative. I just know that I was lucky to get to do it. I got so many people who reached out during the show saying like, you know, my son has a stutter, or I, you know, people messaged me saying like, you know, like I'm, you know, I've got stage 4 and I'm going through my chemo treatments every day I want to give up, but I keep watching the show because, you know, you keep going on, and you know, that kind of stuff hits you, you know, like one of those things, you know, for all the things that America's Got Talent is not, which could be like, oh, all right, they always want to like, you know, whatever, if they push the narrative of someone's story, maybe my story was that season's, but at the same time, like they did such a beautiful job about saying like, this is my story. I didn't ever want to like pursue stand-up. I only came into stand-up because, you know, when I was 20 years old, I had a softball injury, and you know, it was a TBI that was misdiagnosed as a vocal contusion and a concussion, and it changed the whole trajectory of my life, you know. And I couldn't get a job anywhere doing what I wanted to do out in Los Angeles. I wanted to pursue acting, and I loved acting, and that was what I grew up doing. It was something that I've always wanted to do. I had secured a agent and a manager, and I had some auditions for some Disney projects and some movies and some television, and the week that I had final casting for a number of those projects is when that injury happened in 20 2011. And so it was devastating because all my reps, they dropped me. They didn't want to represent me anymore. I didn't have control of my motor skills and my speech. And so I kind of wandered over to stand up feeling like, you know, I feel so compelled to still perform. I love it. I love to be able to, I just, there's something that I just love, and I can't feel like this thing is beating me, or that this is the narrative, or that I can't try to alchemize this situation by, trying to, you know, by not just taking it laying down, you know? So for me, the platform that AGT gave me, and the fact that Howie, someone who's had his own battles, you know, Howie Mandel, someone who has also, dealt with, you know, OCD and mental health. He's a huge mental health advocate, and his own adversities in career. The fact that I got that level of validation from him when I was so young, and I was so vulnerable and impressionable and trying to understand and make sense of this injury that happened to me, make sense of it being, you know, God's plan, being the universe's plan. It was really, really special to have that happen. But at the end of the day, I would burn down a small apartment complex
as we return to the focus.
Yeah.
Well, I got to tell you, one of the things I think that makes you so fantastic, and people may not have realized, I thought your stutter is something that you've had since birth or something. You just clarified. No, it came much later. And so one of the things, Drew, I think, and I'm turning away from AGT, that one of the things makes you just so endearing to people is that you do have this stutter, but at the same time, you weren't born with it, which means you had to learn to wrestle and adjust your life accordingly. And there is this warmth and sincerity that comes across you. I mean, I remember, look, your discussions about your, and I know you lost her in 2022, but your support dog, Stella, and whatever, that's just Drew the human. And so as much as your humor, which we're going to talk about next, comes in and is so incredible, there's always this aura of sincerity and warmth that surround you. And I think it may have been tied to that experience, but you worked with it. You didn't ignore it. You embraced it.
Yeah. I feel like, you might be giving me too much credit. I mean, but maybe not. I don't know. I feel like I, was definitely a person who had to learn humility and patience and that life change that happened to me was definitely a big part of it, because I wasn't a bad person before it happened, but I don't know that I was as compassionate as I am today. And, you know, you and I talking about dogs, Paul, like, you know, I mean, to me, you know, this is going to sound, you know, this might sound unorthodox, but to anybody who actually has experienced it, it won't, you know, there's just this silent understanding that animals, but dogs specifically, have. And it's like they teach you that things that you can't say, especially in my experience, or I feel in my specific experience, you know, they just have a certain level of compassion, and they're almost like they're teachers, but they're listeners. It's like it's just there's so much to learn from dogs, and there was so much to learn from my experience. And I just think the combination of those two things happening, my relationship with my late, you know, I don't know, people say late for their past pets.
Why not? But it's late, Stella. We're talking about Stella.
Right, we're talking about my dog Stella, yeah.
Beloved. Let's go with beloved.
My love, yeah, it did sound like we were married, like I'm a widower. Anyway, yeah, so my late wife dog, Stella, you know, it was just something that, I felt like so many people have since she passed and before, and a number of people she met have expressed to me, how deep of a soul she was. So she taught me so much, compounded by the injury that I was still, you know, growing up from and learning the lessons that had to teach me. It's definitely been a wild lesson, and it's also been special because Stella was a huge part of my, you know, was a huge part of my career. Right. I mean, you know, we did pretty much everything together. And after I did America's Got Talent, a lot of people think that was kind of the thing that kind of like, you know, launched everything, which it was, but it really was like everything that we did on social media afterwards that really established like a kind of a, I felt like it was a, you know, it was just in right in the time where social media was kind of taking off, and I had a YouTube channel where at the end of the show, you know, it was at like, you know, we had like 80,000 subscribers at the end of the show, right? At the end of America's Got Talent. And then we stuck with it. My dog and I, we would vlog. I would vlog to the camera and she would kind of just sit there in the chair next to me with a resting face and just have captions over her head. And that was our dynamic. And it was kind of like she was the straight man to me, just kind of riffing about whatever. And then we kind of grew to, you know, 2 million subscribers just by doing this show. I mean,
well,
so
let's just say it was Stella that grew to 2 million.
I exactly. Yeah. I was the 80,000 and I'll take some, you know, there's always a ratio. So that's what I mean is the fact is if you can be a dog and you can vlog, you will win America's Got Talent.
Exactly.
That's what I'm saying.
I think that's why Taylor Williamson got a dog. I think he saw what was going on with you and got Betty. And now Betty's got her own Instagram, which anyway, you get the point. I want to talk let me talk about your humor because again, loving you back when you're on America's Got Talent. But you know, I love to study comedians because, you know, there's the Stephen Wrights of the world. And there were the Don Rickles. I mean, they're all over the spectrum. Your humor, I'm finding it hard to categorize because you had one line. I'm sorry, I just never forgot this line. And you have specials that people can go watch. They're online, they're on Netflix and whatever. One was, and these are jokes, which I think you did last year is really hot. But you had one line where you said you were stuttering. You were talking to your wife about something. And you kept going, and I don't want to make fun of that, but you were stuttering. Right. And you sort of said somebody near you started to beatbox and sing along and thought you would ever. To me, the way you could take that sort of personal situation and turn it into just a funny, funny line, does your humor begin with you? Does humor, all humor, at least for Drew Lynch, start at home?
Well, first of all, I do feel offended that you tried to do a stutter there, Paul. That was
there's so much you have to learn, my friend.
Yeah, there's so much you have to learn. So first of all, that story you're talking about there is a true story. My wife and I, we were, we're a functional couple.
That's good.
I would say, yeah, we're functional. We're practical. But we're getting along because
is she there? Can we confirm any of this with her?
No, she is alive, but she's not in the corner bound right now.
Okay, all right.
But she has ADHD, and so her mind is very she's just very scattered. So she's just very much here. So you can see how that could bring up some challenges with somebody who stutters and is struggling to even keep someone's attention. And she's just, you know, and there was one time where. I was just having a really difficult day with, you know, it comes in, it ebbs and flows. Sometimes I feel sometimes really, really good. And sometimes I feel like it's winning. Right. And so I felt one day, like I was just having a tough day and she asked me, hey babe, what's the matter? And what I was trying to say, it's nothing. It's just today I feel very stressed. But the time that I said the word stressed is when I stuttered on the and so it sounded like like that. And my wife started dancing in it too. It wasn't like she did it in a mean way. She did it in such a involuntary way. Like it just was the thing that happened. And she just kind of hit like a little thing because she was just so distracted. She was listening, but she was distracted. And I remember as soon as she did that, she saw my face reacting in horror. I mean, I was impressed, but I was also horrified. I was like, I was weirdly more attracted to her, but I couldn't trust her anymore. It was all these things. And she immediately, as soon as she did it, it was just so involuntary. She immediately burst into tears. She was so, and I was like consoling her. I was like, no, it was really funny what you did. And she's like, I just didn't mean to do it. And I was like, no, it's okay. I've never seen that before. You're a savage and I can't see you in any other way. You know what I mean? It was like my first alliance on Survivor, like voted me out. That's how it felt. But to answer your question, Paul, I just feel like I've always, known that you want to, people want to weaponize maybe your shortcomings. And if you take yourself too seriously and you try to play those so close to yourself that you're almost not aware of the fact that you're a human being. I mean, that's kind of what the beauty of stuttering taught me, was that here's something that you have now that you cannot hide from. You can't hide behind the fact that you can't weaponize humor to put the attention on somebody else. You can't, you know, avoid the fact that, you know, you are imperfect by having this thing that you can no longer lie to yourself about, that you maybe feel like that you're on a different plane or you're in a different bracket that someone else isn't. And so by being somebody who suffers from, you know, stuttering and depression and being short and being, you know, having a past, like we've all had something, but the fact that you can use awareness to try to humanize your experience in making it digestible for someone else. I don't know if that's the key to humor, if that's necessarily my brand, but I just know that I wouldn't want to go about it any other way. What other point would there be in making someone feel like they're okay to have their experience if it weren't for the fact that you could just be so open and vulnerable with your own? So my vulnerability, I think, is the thing that is right where I start. The place of pain is usually right around where I start.
So but the self-deprecating humor, I remember another, you just triggered kind of another line for me where you talked about the fact that you get rejected, or you did get rejected by girls you weren't even approaching. So I'm sort of curious. I'm a little older than you, I think. So, but you'll know this name. Is a role model in comedy at all for you, Rodney Dangerfield?
Oh, wow. I know Rodney's work. But
yeah,
I don't get no respect. Yeah, I feel like we couldn't be more different, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Well, I guess the reason it strikes me is because, I mean, you're not about I don't get no respect, but for you, Rodney Dangerfield, it's always self-deprecating. It's always it ends in a self-put-down. So he's never taken anybody else down. He sounds like he's going to, but in the end it's really himself.
I know, and that's what I love about what he's able to do. Like he's just like you're just you know, you really are, it's kind of, yes, it's a little bit sad clown, but you are, you're empathizing, but you're also commiserating. Like there's just something so unique about what comedy is able to do. And one of the things I really love about comedians is how they, you know, they're, you know, we talk about like Stephen Wright, we talk about Don Rickles, like these are two very different approaches, like Rodney Dangerfield, very different approach, like, you know, from Ellen to Nate to Louis to Bill to Chappelle to all of these people have these different approaches, but somehow they found their own brand within themselves to put their mark on what makes them sort of unique and what makes it connect with other people. And you know, I always, if I can make a joke and it can be at my expense, like I always find that to be so, like you get to the meat of the joke where you're complaining and you feel like you're in the right and you're saying some things that maybe even people are on your side. You're saying things and they're like, yeah, I totally get it. And then you can just pivot just the last part of whatever the joke is. It could be the last word. It could be the last two that changes the whole context of everything that somebody thought beforehand, which is like a target assumption. And then you take a hard left somewhere else and it changes the whole subtext of what it was you were explaining in the first place. That to me is my favorite part about what comedy is. Even what stuttering taught, like stuttering taught me how to write jokes because it teaches you word economy. It teaches you that you can't, if there's an extra word that you can get rid of that you don't need, then do it. It teaches you how to edit. It teaches you that, like, even if one word starts one way, but that second syllable is a different word entirely, it can change the whole sentence that you set up to that point. So I'm just really grateful for the science of what comedy's taught me. And I think above all of anything, I just feel like I'm a student of it. I'm always in the process of learning about it.
So if what I'm hearing you write correctly, it sounds like you're saying that when you're writing a routine or writing a joke, part of what goes through your mind is, these particular words together may be more difficult for me to say, so I will not do it that way. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, I mean, sometimes it'll feel like it's like I'm, you know, Yeah, like sometimes it'll feel like I can't always control what it is that I'm going to. I know what it is that I want to say, and sometimes I have to marry myself to exact words. But sometimes my stutter might not be as cooperative. But I just mean when I was really, really young in my comedy career, I spoke I spoke. It was even more difficult to talk, and so the amount of words that I was able to use before I could lose all of the audience's attention was so few. So I had to really tighten up every single thing that I was working on, because I felt like I was going to lose the audience if I didn't. So stuttering is really what taught me how to kind of write a joke and how to like just you can start the one word, you know, one way, and then if that second syllable is a different, it makes it a different word altogether, but the audience thought you were saying one thing. I mean, that's what the beauty of a joke is. It's sometimes like watching magic. You're like, wow, how did it go that way? I didn't see it going there. So that was really what was kind of fun for me.
So we have a comedian on our morning show. And by the way, I'm going to guess when we get closer to your appearances in Chicago at the Den Theater on January 31st and February 1st, it won't surprise me if they try and work out to have you on the morning show, because we're number one by far. And I think that's going to happen. But part of the morning show team is a comedian named Mike Toomey, who's absolutely hysterical. And he posted something. I want to get your reaction to it, because I'm sure Michael watched this. And that is, he said, you know, the sign of a true comedian, of the best comedian, is somebody whose material you can read. You don't need to see them. You don't need to hear them. Mm. That's where Stephen Wright came to me, because I read Stephen Wright's jokes and I'm on the floor. Is your humor, I guess I'm challenging you, but does your humor stand that test where you can read my stuff, Drew's stuff, and I'm good to go? Or do you say, well, you kind of need to see me, hear me?
I feel like what Mike is saying is actually something that has a, I feel like there's so much truth to that. I mean, it's like the foundation of a house, right? Like you can make a house look really, really good, or you can paint it, or, but if the writing is really what the structure is, that's what the foundation is. And so if you really read some thing from somebody that you like, and it serves on its own, it's like, man, that's a well-written joke, and that's genuinely all that you need. That's why people like Stephen Wright and Jeselnik, and you know, these are writers, you know, these are textbook, like they just write. And I will say that it's not needed, but sometimes you can also fall in love with like someone like Sebastian Maniscalco, big Chicago guy, right?
Yeah.
You can read his jokes, and I think they're funny jokes, but you can't, the way Sebastian does it, in the way where he's like, like that, if you were to read that on paper, if you were to be like, you know, I go to the store and this guy looks at me, right? Like that's something you could read, but let's say Sebastian puts a little bit of like, you know, he puts a little bit of hot sauce on it, right? He puts his spin on how it goes. And I just think that sometimes is what takes it from this is amazing foundation and I love the joke to this is why I enjoy watching this person tell that joke.
So when you come to Chicago, I keep saying these dates, Friday, January 31st, two shows, by the way, 7:15, 9:30, Saturday, the 1st of February, 7:15, 9:30 at the Den Theater. Let's talk a little bit about what we're going to get, because your humor, aside from all this self-deprecating stuff and the fact that your wife probably has to do more stuff for a new routine, but I'm guessing, I shouldn't say I'm guessing because I know, but a lot of your humor has to do with being on the road. You deal with current topics. So are you writing stuff the day of the show, depending on what's going on in the world? Because by January 31st, there's going to be a lot of stuff going on in the world.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. We'll hopefully have our second Capitol stormed by then. Just kidding. I like to isolate our viewers by the end of the thing. So I just want to make sure I did
lose
that.
Lose half of them. Bring
them in. Yeah, that's right. To be honest with you, the Den is actually where I'm shooting my next special. So
during these shows?
Yeah. So for those shows, I'm shooting my special. And I've been working on material. It's basically addressing everything to do with the stuttering comedian, the stuttering component, because my relationship to it for years has been, I've addressed it in various ways at the top of every special. That way I can just kind of say it. I make a joke about it. I make you aware that I know I'm aware about it. And then I move on, because I never want it to be something that defines me, defines what it is that I'm talking about. But this feels like it's more of a, kind of like a head-on approach in this hour. And to answer your question, yes, there will always be something that happens that I incorporated it probably at the top of every show, because I love making every single appearance specific to that audience. That way they feel like, okay, he was there in the room, he was present, and there's always something that happens. However, I'm very excited to be shooting out there in Chicago, because I think the Midwest is obviously beautiful. Chicago crowds are some of my favorite, and I'm a Midwest boy myself, so.
Yeah, and I agree with you. The audiences are great. And this is a comedy town. I mean, Second City and Io. Yeah. And this is just, it's a comedy town. But it also would suggest that, because this is a special, I did not know they were going to shoot a special. So thank you for letting me know that. But it also means you have to be more sensitive. You can't say, look at what funny thing happened in Washington this morning, because by the time it gets edited and aired, it ain't going to be that morning anymore. And maybe not even that funny.
Exactly. It's true. And honestly, I'm just hoping that nothing in the world happens. That way I don't have to address it. That's my approach.
From taping until airtime is what you're saying?
From now until taping, honestly, okay. Nothing better happen at all, or else I won't get no respect. That's the way I'll feel.
Look how you brought that little, that little thing back in there. I also know you are a fan. You're sort of well known for doing appearances on, and the phrase I took was most downloaded shows. I'm saying that because that's now a challenge to make sure this becomes one of the most downloaded shows that I've done. But you have a respect for podcasts, don't you? I mean, you know, we're not TV right now. You're not on our morning news, which I think you will be. We'll see. But, but you seem to have a respect for different forms, and realizing people get their news and their information in various formats these days.
I think so. I feel like it's a grind in any way that anybody is trying to get themselves out there. Like, I love this show that you do, Paul, because I think, like, you know, you find guests that you want to have like extensive candid conversations with them about whatever career, whatever it is they're working on in their personal lives. Like, that's kind of a cool thing, because, you know, I feel like everybody has some sort of medium that they gravitate towards. And if that's what authentically is your thing, then do that thing. You know, like for me, for a while, it was the vlogs. And for me, then it was like short form videos. And then it was like, all right, I just want to do crowd work. And then it was, you know, it changes. Right. And so, anytime that I get the opportunity to be on somebody's show, not just because of publicity, but just because I like to get to know people as well. I want to know what it is that they're doing and their aspirations, and where it is that they are in their world.
By the way, I just laughed because I thought you said something, but you said short form videos, right?
I did. What did you think?
Not what
I said.
I thought you said. I heard short porn videos. So that's.
Oh, that's yeah. No. That's the thing. Every video I do, every porn video I do is going to be short. It's just it's a lasting issue. But I, you know, if I could make an orgasm last as long as a sentence for me, my God, we'll see which one finishes first. Am I right? I'm out of the porn game. I don't do that as much.
And you're in where you need to be. And thank you for saying that. Cause by the way, it's true. When you do the TV shows, it's the 4 minutes, it's the whatever, you're there to sell a show, you're there to whatever. And what I love about this show is I wanted to get to know you. You know, I wanted to talk a little bit and go a little bit deeper into who is Drew Lynch, for example. People may not know that your actual first name is Andrew.
I know. It's devastating. Honestly, I can't believe you brought it up, Paul. I had one rule. It's all right. I just feel like I'm more of a Drew, you know? Andrews are so, like, here's the thing. I can get together with an Andrew and we can agree that an Andy is just not someone you trust. That,
what about an
I feel like an Andy. An Ange?
Ange. Like in Andy Griffith, he went, you know, they called him Ange.
Did they? Well, that's just all types of illogic. So I can't get behind that at all. If there's a form, you don't have my signature on that. But I will say that Andrew, it goes like this. It goes Drew, Andrew, Andy, I don't know, some guy named Graydon, and then Ange. I don't know, some dude named Griffith or Brogan or whatever these dudes' names are. They're just names after sounds nowadays. Dudes are like, hey, my name's Muff or whatever. My name's Diff. We don't know. To answer your question, I am a man, and I will do short porn for free.
All right. I've got that. By the way, is there a new dog?
There is a new dog. Her name is Rakia. That's a Bulgarian alcohol. My wife is Bulgarian and my family is alcoholics. So
it's a tribute.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's a way that we can keep dogs and drinking both in our family and close to our livers. So, I feel very differently about my relationship to this puppy. I love just as much, but she's very much a younger sibling energy, and Stella was like an older sibling, sort of like composed and very much like wants her space, and she was dignified. And this one is like she's comes out of the woods wearing like a raccoon head. It's insane. She's a psycho. So, different personalities, different dogs, but I'll never not be around dogs because I think they are the salt of the earth.
I am with you. I've got one near me right now. I lost one about a year ago. All about dogs. So they're really important. Well, Drew, the way your career has gone since the 10th season of America's Got Talent, it's just fantastic. I mean, the good news is a lot of people fade away. You have never done that. And you were there. And to be honest with you, sometimes, you know, even if people say, Drew Lynch, I know that name. Well, it's the comedian. He happens to have a stutter. Oh, yeah, him. But I think that's perfect. Right? It means it's a great way for people to know. People can see you on Friday, January 31st. Did I say this enough? At 7:15 and 9:30, and then Saturday, same times. And you're going to film all four? Because when I show up, I want to be sure if I do 5 minutes that I'm part of the special.
Yeah. Yeah, of course you will. And no, I want you headlining. You know that, Paul. I need you closing it out, buddy.
I appreciate it. Tickets, you want to give the website? I'll give it for you.
Yeah.
Tickets can be gotten at the Den Theater, and it's spelled the proper way, Drew. Theater, T-R-E, the British way. I love that.
Oh,
about.
Good. See, that's fancy. Yeah, Theater. I don't. Yes. We have some aristocrats coming down for the taping that night. That's exciting.
Yeah, I'm one of them. I'm a snob, so I'll be there for that, too. So it's thedentheater.com. I can't wait to see you. I can't wait to hear the new material. Please bring Rakia with you, because that would be nice. And
yeah, sure would.
And I appreciate your time. I really do. You're a great guy, and I thank you. And I thank you for joining me.
Thanks, Paul.